She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Happy Saturday. Thank you so much for joining us today. The show is sponsored in part by our very good friends, Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona, where their business is changing lives, and change lives indeed they do. Many people think of them as a resale outlet, and I think of them as a major service provider in cities all over the world for at-risk families. And also, my girlfriends and I consider it a great place to get a good bargain on some quality stuff. So thank you, Goodwill, for your support of Mrs. Green's World mission and vision. We have a first-of-its-kind show today, and I'm very excited about it. And I say that very sincerely. I'm going to be speaking with Reverend Canon Sally Bingham. And Sally is an Episcopal priest whose mission is to deepen the connection between ecology and religion, and she has been. She has started something called the Regeneration Project. She preaches energy conservation to people of all faiths, something we'll be hearing about. And of course, she couldn't stop at that. She now has the Regeneration Project's Interfaith Power and Light campaign. So from where I sit, some very powerful work on behalf of the planet, much needed work. I'm fascinated by what she's doing, and I'm sure you'll want to stay here with us. Sally, welcome to Mrs. Green's World.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be on.
Just a quick announcement. Please remember to join me every Saturday at noon, Arizona time, and Sally and I were talking about it. We're the only place that doesn't change time. So someone told me you should say Pacific Daylight Time, and then there's Eastern Standard Time. So I'm just saying Arizona time now and trying to connect with people and saying we're the wacky ones that always stay the same. Remember that you can listen to the show on your iPhone or Droid. All of the podcasts from the shows are on my website right there for your listening pleasure at mrsgreensworld.com. The best way to stay connected with me is Facebook, Twitter, and my ever-growing Pinterest, which cracks me up. If you have any questions, you can try Gina at Mrs. Green's World or info at mrsgreensworld.com, which will probably get you a quicker response. And then one more quick thing before we get on to you, Sally. As all of you know, the show is made possible by the support of many wonderful sponsors that help support the mission and vision of Mrs. Green's World and our team. And let me give you a shout out to one of our partners from New York who cares about our health deeply. The company's name is EcoBella. I invite you to visit their website to support a company like this if you are interested in healthy, organic, fair trade, vegan, they absolutely cruelty-free products. If you're a Facebook person, check them out on Facebook. Their website is eco with two C's, Bella.com. And a little side note, it was interesting to me and quite affirming when I interviewed Kate Lewis from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Bio-Preferred Program, who does a vetting process for products. And she was very familiar with EcoBella skincare and beauty products, which delighted me. And she suggested that I pass the information on to Sally Malenga at EcoBella to go through the process of getting their seal of approval. So I thought that was a pretty cool close in the loop. So Sally, let's get started with you. Welcome, welcome, welcome. There's so much that you're doing, and with a potentially, you know, one of the most powerful energy that could be harnessed on the planet, if you ask me, are through the voices of faith-based organizations. So why don't we start with a little bit of background about you. And in the article that I got that I saved forever, I gave it to Kelly a long time ago. It was July of 2010. And I thought, I want to interview this woman. It says something about your, you had an eco aha moment. So let's start with where you were and how that happened.
Well, thanks. It's wonderful to have the opportunity to talk about this work to hopefully a new audience. I believe, just as you just articulated, Mrs. Green, that The faith community has a very powerful role in the dialogue about saving creation. And that's why I do what I do, because I think that clergy in all denominations talking about these issues from the pulpit can have a tremendous amount of influence. And it takes it out of the hands of politicians and out of the hands of environmental organizations, but makes it a matter of faith, right along with love, justice, and peace, which is what all mainstream religions teach: love, justice, and peace. And we bring integrity of creation into that, and, you know, we can be very influential. I didn't have a really, back to your question about an aha moment, it wasn't a moment. It happened over the process of about a year when I became a trustee for one of our country's most influential and largest environmental organizations, our national group called Environmental Defense Fund, and some of your listeners, and you may have heard of them. I was invited to become a trustee on there and be on their national board of directors. At every board meeting, someone would come in from the staff who would be either a scientist or an economist, and they would explain to the trustees what was going on in terms of human behavior on the planet, whether it was overfishing or cutting down trees, coral reefs that were dying, polluted air, lead in paint, too many antibiotics in our livestock that we're eating. All these issues were resonating with me, and I couldn't figure out quite why I never heard anyone talk about this from the pulpit. How can people sit in a pew, profess a love for God, a love for creation, and the commandment to love one another, love your neighbor as yourself? If we really believed all that, how could we be destroying creation, and how could we be polluting our neighbor's air? And so I began talking to clergy about their messaging from the pulpit. And this is back now in the mid-1980s. And there were just no clergy that I knew of who had saving creation as an agenda item. So that's really what led to my going back to school and finding out where the disconnect was between what we say we believe in and how we behave. I grew up as an Episcopalian, was always attending Episcopal churches, whether we were living in New York or in San Francisco, where I now live. I always was a member of an Episcopal church, not a particularly devout in the sense that I didn't go to church every single Sunday, but
right.
my children served as acolytes, and I was there on a somewhat regular basis. But this burning in me to find out how people could get in the pulpit and give one sermon after another every single week and never, ever talk about saving creation, when in fact, in our prayer book, we pray for a reverence for the earth.
For the earth,
gracious,
right.
And loving God, give us a reverence for the earth. So that's kind of a little bit of the background.
And Sally, I'll tell you this. I didn't have an aha moment when I started the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network at 57 years old. It wasn't like, oh, I think I'll get up tomorrow and start a radio show. But it was the same kind of journey, almost out of frustration of what can I do with all of this that I see, where I'm surrounded by good, caring people that are committed and active in their communities, but they literally, and it says this in your article, they're throwing trash out of the windows of their car, they're using paper towels, like 4 paper towels, to clean up a little spill on the counter. And there were examples after examples, and I'm saying to myself, what can I do about it? So I really connect with that. As it went along, the frustration, how can I be the most effective voice to raise the consciousness? So how did you start to, you know, in the article, and it's an old article, but of course I looked at current information on the website. It said that you had reached 10,000 congregations in 30 states through the Regeneration Project. What does that look like now, and how did you take step one to get to 30,000? I think people hear that, it's daunting, but if people want to begin taking action by hearing this and being inspired for their congregation, how did you go to step one?
Well, step one was going back to school and studying religion and understanding the ecological systems that make our world happen and keep everything healthy and working. So it was a 10-year process for me. It
wasn't, oh, my gosh.
I didn't just wake up one day and say, okay,
I'll start a program.
Yeah, right. I'm going to bring on 10,000 churches just all overnight. It didn't happen like that. I went back to, I had never been to college, and I was 45, so I had to go through 4 years of college, and because I was living in San Francisco, I went to the University of San Francisco, which is a Jesuit school. So I got a wonderful Christian education, and I also was studying environmental studies at the same time. I took psychology as a major, as a minor, trying to understand what I was doing in college at 45 years old. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And then after college, I was still very disappointed, and no one, I was getting all this information from Environmental Defense Fund of the continued harm that people were causing on the planet, and still not hearing anybody talk about this from the pulpit. So I went to seminary at that point. I'd been to 4 years of college, and then I went to seminary, and that, of course, is a much deeper and thorough theological education that I got in undergrad. And now I went to the bishop and talked to him about, was this a call to holy orders? Does it seem as if, is God using me as a tool to get this message out? And after I had spent an additional 3 years, so I had 4 years of college, 3 years of seminary, and an additional 3 years where we tested my vocation. And I say we because it's a process, and a lot of people go through this with you. You don't just suddenly decide, all right, I'm going to be a priest and become ordained. It's so you have a committee of people that work with you. You have a congregation where you go in and spend, as I say, 3 years working with children in Sunday school, doing adult education, assisting at all the services, whether it's a funeral or a wedding or a baptism. And I did that, and 10 years later, it was decided that this was a real call to a ministry, and that God was going to use my my passion for ecological health to get this word out to other people. So when I was ordained, I launched the Regeneration Project, and it's a nonprofit. I never, except for a very short period of time, worked in a parish.
Right.
I started right out with this nonprofit called the Regeneration Project, and that was to deepen the connection between ecology and faith. But over this period of 10 years, I'm now up to 1994 or 5, and global warming was becoming a very serious issue, and California had deregulated the energy industry, and you could, as a client of Pacific Gas and Electric, you could switch your power resource over to wind and sun. So the idea that people could start saving the planet by using renewable resources, wind, sun, biomass, geothermal, for their electricity versus fossil fuels, and of course coal, which is the dirtiest burning fossil fuel.
Right.
And that if we could get our congregations to serve as examples to the community and start using renewable energy themselves, then people would do this in their homes. Well, we found that it certainly in the beginning, the renewable energy cost more. So people had to become energy efficient. We had to cut down on the amount of energy we were using so we could put the saved money into the renewable. And this was going on for 3 years, between 97 and the year 2000. In California, we had Episcopal Church is buying renewable energy. And then, it's a complicated story, but the green market people were unable to make money in this new market. So the congregations that were buying renewable energy were switched back to brown power. And that's when I went up and partnered with the California Council of Churches. And Scott Anderson, a wonderful man who's now running the Wisconsin Council of Churches, but he partnered with me and gave us a much larger audience because we became interfaith rather than just Episcopal Church
right,
people.
Right. So, yeah, the exponential impact that it could be had now.
And the idea behind this was that if we could get congregations in California, all of them, or most, and people in the pews to request more renewable energy in the grid, everybody would share in the renewable energy instead of just people who chose it on their utility bill.
Right.
Well, along the lines in there, somebody did an article that was in the Wall Street Journal, and it said, isn't this interesting that the religious community is getting involved in renewable energy? Well, then my phone rang, and a big charitable foundation in the East Coast wanted to fund my having a national campaign manager to take this ministry, if you will, or take this idea and go national with it. So we hired an executive director. She's still with us today, Susan Stevenson. She's been with me now for 11 years. And that's when we decided to go out across the country. Now you're into the 10,000 congregations. We have programs. Interfaith Power and Light is in 39 states now and one in Washington, D.C. So there are 40 programs, and it's an affiliated network. If any of your listeners are interested in finding out more, our website has a little a flag, if you will, that says your state, and you click on your state and you find out, is your state one of the ones where we have a program? And then we ask congregations to, it's free to join our program, and we provide the congregation of all denominations. We have mosques and synagogues. We have a Jain center. We have several Buddhist temples. And then we provide the resources for those congregations to cut their carbon footprint. And this is a religious response to global warming.
And Sally, that you talk about the phone rang and somebody wants to give you a sizable donation from the East Coast. It had to be a happy day after all of the things that you had been through and the point at which you were in your journey. That is, I keep hoping Oprah will call and say, I want to take your radio show internationally. So maybe it'll be the same thing. I have right. ultimate faith. I really do. But it's a very powerful story. Very powerful. So what happened when the was there any pushback? I don't want to talk about the negative side of it, but were people by and large in the congregations? I mean, outside of California, people like me salivate over all of the progressive programs that happen. People that disagree with me say, oh yeah, it's liberal California, blah, blah, blah. And you know that there's differences. There's a different mindset, especially in Arizona, a very conservative state. I don't make it political. To me, being good stewards of the earth is not a political issue. It is truly every man's responsibility, and it's in the good book. So what did you get any pushback along the way saying this really shouldn't be what we're talking about as congregations?
Absolutely we did, and particularly in the beginning, people were saying it's not right to bring a political issue into the pulpit, that there's separation between church and state. And the response to that is, because you just said it, this is not a political
issue. It's not.
Unfortunately, it has become so. But we don't look at it or talk about it from that perspective. We use the Bible. We use the scripture that people read and understand and are hopefully learning from. We use that resource to show folks that this is a spiritual and it's an issue and a matter of faith. And when people will listen, they will agree with you. And there's no mainstream religion that says it's okay to just wreck the earth. There are people who say this is a political issue and you shouldn't be here talking about it. There are also, when you get, now we have programs all over the country. I'm well aware of the differences between Arizona, Georgia, Alabama, and what happens in California.
Right. Ouch.
The fun thing for me is that I get invited to preach and teach and give lectures in all those states, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, and a clergy will invite me to come and preach in their church, deliver the message, and then I'm gone. Now, if the person doesn't like it,
they don't have to come.
Right. Well, no, they come. They come, and then he or she can simply say, oh, well, that's that liberal progressive person from California. Don't mind her.
Okay, we're going to have to take a short break, and I'm sure nobody listening wants us to. Please stay here with me. Joining me is Sally Bingham, an Episcopal priest whose mission is to deepen the connection between ecology and religion. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back. Lots more to talk about.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best in class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand new sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill. But I have a bigger reason to give. A while back, I lost my job and I couldn't even support my family. A lot of people don't know Goodwill can help you find a job, but that's what they did for me. I've had this job for 7 years and I love going to work. You know how they say Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill needs your donations now more than ever. Please donate today.
You can save hundreds on home improvement by checking out Habitat for Humanity's Habastore. The Habastore sells new and gently used home improvement items for pennies on the dollar. You can find cabinets, doors, windows, light fixtures, furniture, and much more. Plus, our inventory is constantly changing. You'll be saving money, and all the profits go to Habitat for Humanity Tucson, helping to build a better community. The Habastore is located at 935 West Grant Road. You can reach us at 520-889-7200 or habitattucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are having a wonderful show today. We have with us Reverend Sally Bingham, who is an Episcopal priest, and her mission is to deepen the connection between ecology and religion. She is certainly having a global impact. And Sally, I am thrilled to tell you that while we were off air, I went a little bit deeper on the page for the Arizona Interfaith Power and Light. I just want to tell you, I was thrilled that we have very active chapters in Arizona and in Tucson, and I am sure I know some of the people connected. I just didn't know it as that. My friend Hank Kryzik has been very passionately involved in Tucson and Southern Arizona, and there are quite a few churches, many in Phoenix and in Flagstaff. So the word is certainly spreading in Arizona, and we have wonderful people here doing great work for the planet throughout the state. So I shouldn't have been so negative about my own state, because I hang around with all those people.
Yeah, no, they're doing a great job. That's a really wonderful program, and I was there early last year. I think it was 2011 when they launched their program, and it might have been 2010. Time is going by so quickly for me, but I was there when they launched their program.
And it's growing. I mean, you drive down the street here, and to me, there's just such a message, a psychological message, when you're driving down the street and you see one of the churches you love with a solar array. And I know that's just one part of it, but the message is so clear. You do it without saying anything. You just see it, and it's a great example of how to show up. So let's get back to when you got this phone call and you were able to hire a national director. What kinds of support do you give, and how do you go about building the connections for the different locations throughout the country and providing them with educational resources? What is the approach that you use for that?
Well, the interesting thing is that we don't initiate the program getting started. For example, in Arizona, those folks came to us and said, we would like to start an Interfaith Power and Light program here in Arizona. And they, just like you, read about it in a magazine, or they heard about it on the radio, or they heard me speak somewhere. And then a group of people from a congregation, and because we ask this to be an interfaith program, they have to have a steering committee. In fact, it's on the website. There are certain steps that a group of people have to go through in order to become an Interfaith Power and Light, because obviously we have the name trademarked and you have to operate with certain standards to be an Interfaith Power and Light. But contrary to what you might think, we do not go out soliciting people to join our program. They join because they hear about it and they want to.
So you talk about success. I mean, that's what you want. You want your phone ringing because the program sells itself. In one of the pictures, there's a dear friend of mine named Bob Dame, who unfortunately passed away. Very, very young man, to me young. He was in his early 50s. And I remember Bob being just absolutely, he and his wife, at the forefront of making some of these happen. So we'll be certainly spreading the word about this show and making sure that the people that I know get the word out so that we can help it grow. So people call you.
They have events. I mean, the folks there in Arizona will find a congregation where they can take an evening and invite all the neighboring churches or synagogues to attend and then hear about the program. And then hopefully more and more will join, because the more congregations that join, the more individual people hear about it. And our hope is that if a congregation puts in compact fluorescent light bulbs, if they caulk their windows, if they get energy-efficient appliances, and they start saving money on energy, that message will get to the people in the pews. They will go home and do the same thing in their homes. And actually, in Arizona, I mean, what better place for people to have solar on their roof?
There isn't a better one, I don't think, and I don't have it yet. And I keep saying that on the show till people really come and put the pressure on, and it's simply been a matter of time. It's a full life we're living here with trying to, you know, change the planet, but it's not an excuse. We've had the people come and give us an estimate, a wonderful locally owned company here, but you're right, there isn't a better place. And you, what you're talking about to me, I always love to use the word systemic. Sustainability is not something you do at work or at home or while you're driving. It's sustainability is an inside job. So it's the place from which you come, and then you live your life that way. It's a transformative place. It has been for us, because you start thinking of one thing. It's if you give a mouse a cookie, you have to give him a glass of milk. And then you start realizing, oh, I'm going to take to-go containers to this restaurant because they give styrofoam. And it becomes that delightful consciousness, not a burden. I want to shout out your website again for people throughout the show so that they can look at it. It's a very easy website to navigate. It's beautiful. And it's theregenerationproject.org. And I invite people that are listening We have a lot of people, faith-based people, that are connected with Mrs. Green's world, and I would love them to see, you know, more and learn more about the work you're doing. Sally, let's switch just a little bit, unless you want to close that. I'm really curious to talk to you a little bit about the involvement of youth in congregations and what has been your experience nationally there. I just feel such hope in the youth groups that I connect with or speak to. What's going on with the congregations and the youth groups relative to this topic?
Well, just before I answer that, let me just add that interfaithpowerandlight.org also goes directly to our website.
Okay, Interfaith Power
Interfaith
and Light.
Power and Light.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting because I think any of the listeners who are part of congregations know that the youth of today have lost interest in religion, at least in mainstream religion. And I know from my own experience, I have three children. They will come to church if I'm preaching that day, but in terms of their own interest, it's not a high priority. And I think it's very sad, but I believe that the reason the attendance is down in many, many congregations and denominations is because for hundreds of years, congregations have been talking to people about things that are 2,000 and in some cases 6,000, 10,000 years old, and it doesn't relate to what people are doing today. And there are a couple of wonderful unintended consequences around the ministry we're doing, and that is that young people are interested in the environment, and they're interested in the world that's being left to them. And that is bringing some of these young folks back into congregations. And I think that it's a very important message for young people to know that their elders and their congregations and their clergies do care about the world that we're leaving, and that we need to keep the air clean. We need to leave the planet better than it was when we got here rather than in worse conditions. And I have found, though, in terms of from the faith community, it's older people who are really getting behind this ministry. Young people are, there are college ministries around climate change. There's a fellow named Bill McKibben, 350.org.
Right. No, Bill, yes. I would love to get him on the show at some point. We have had 350.org, but not Bill. He's always too busy.
Well, he has been rallying the youth of this country, and I would say the youth are more involved with the secular organizations than they are with congregations. Now, that's not to say in some parts of the country and in some Interfaith Power and Light programs around the country, they do have a program for youth, and they have them out selling compact fluorescent light bulbs rather than cookies or candy.
Or pretzels. That's awesome. That's really a very, very good way to go about it. I think that my granddaughter, they moved to Taos, but I think one of their projects was light bulbs. What a great way to spread the word.
Yes, and then the children understand, too. Why am I out here selling a compact fluorescent light bulb instead of chocolate candy to go on a ski trip?
But
so the kids get educated that way. And then, of course, they stand at your door and explain to you that the compact fluorescent light bulb saves electricity. It uses about one quarter of what the old-fashioned incandescent ones use.
And, you know, I would go ahead.
And then someone might say, well, why are you doing this? And these children get an education around where does your electricity come from? And a lot of people don't know that any more than people know where their water comes from. They think it comes out of the faucet when they turn it on. But where's your watershed? Where is the snow melt? Where is the reservoir that provides your water? It's the same thing with electricity. When you turn on the light switch, do you know where that electricity is coming from? Where is it? Is it from a coal plant? Is it from biomass somewhere? Is it coming from a wind turbine or sun? And those are things that we can educate people about and that the children can learn about and pass that information on to their parents or to whoever they're selling a light bulb to.
And I think it's great that you picked the light bulb, because I've done a lot of research about the impact of just that. And one of the things that I find interesting in this journey is it was overcoming objections, because the beginning CFL light bulbs were horrible. We bought some and they didn't have, I know this is not what they're called, but they didn't have watts. They weren't in degrees of brightness. Now they have every kind of CFL light bulb that would be in the equivalent of an incandescent for reading, for soft lighting, and they are so, like in Arizona, Sally, they're so less heat producing. Sitting by my bedside table having a CFL, the lamp doesn't get hot, I don't get hot, and God knows it's been 107, 110 every day here. So even that part, and when you have them all over the house, somebody on our show said, go around your house and you have at least 50-some light bulbs. I think that was the number. And we have at least that. I mean, they're everywhere, in the bathrooms and in the closets and all that. So we've made the switch, and it does make a difference. For your electric bill, in terms of the heat that you need to keep them on, but then in terms of how hot your house gets.
Right.
So
they're way cheaper.
They are. That's right. And they used to be cost prohibitive. Here, I know Tucson Electric Power does a buyback program, and they massively purchase them and offer them at all of the big box stores and the Ace Hardwares, which are locally owned, for there are what I would call ganga deals. Okay, let's talk a little bit about when the rubber, or if the rubber ever hits the road, when it comes to something that is clearly a political issue, and I'll give you an example, but clearly for the greater good. It should not be a political issue, but it is. For example, the Keystone Pipeline. What do you do? What do your groups do, your organizations do, when it has been polarized politically, which I, of course, and I think you agree, it should never be. It's about the planet Earth. It's about Mother Earth. It's about the greater good. It's about our health. What do the faith-based organizations, especially the ones you're involved in, how do you spin that? What do you advise people to do? Do you get involved? Do you stay away?
Well, we actually have taken a stand on the Keystone Pipeline, and we're adamantly against it, because we cannot see any reason why our country should take the kind of risk that it would take to bring dirty tar sand oil all the way from Alberta, Canada, down to the Gulf of Mexico. It just seems completely unnecessary. And the spin on that is that it'll create 20,000 jobs, when in fact it's only going to create something like 500 jobs. And I have preached about this, not specifically on Keystone, but after the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
That taking that kind of risk when you don't know that you're safe from accidents, and nearly all of these methods of going deeper and deeper into the innards of the planet, if you will, to find more oil, we are taking more and more risk with our precious natural resources. That's the way, that's the stand we're taking on the Keystone Pipeline, that it's taking too big a risk when it's going to run through this pristine center of America, where we are so dependent upon the agriculture and the water there. Taking a risk of destroying that land or any small leak, which would hurt crops and people, it's not worth doing.
And the installation of it, I mean, every aspect of it to me, I have signed many petitions and sent them out via the Mrs. Green's network, because to me there is no upside. And we don't know all the risks. We will destroy habitats. They don't come in and walk gently when they're installing it. So I'm so impressed and excited, and believe it's the right thing to do for your organizations, and it is helping to stop it. I mean, to me, it's with getting all of us united in the voice against it, so far so good, but it's going to rear its ugly head again. You know that. We have to go to another short break. And, you know, when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about you're doing, there's been some information on NPR this week about climate change and some of the naysayers, coming over to our side about climate change and making, you know, bold statements about that. And then I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the international impact that you're having, because you are thinking globally, acting locally, and also acting globally. So that, is that sound good for the next run of the show?
Sure, and love to talk about climate change, and we do have an international piece of our work as well.
Okay, so if everybody would just please stay here with us, we're having a great conversation with Reverend Sally Bingham, an Episcopal priest whose mission is to deepen the connection between ecology and religion. Stay here with me.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. Did you know that the 2012 VW Beetle has been completely redesigned, that it has exciting new features, look, and performance, and that it is one of Oprah's best things for 2012? The best news is Chapman VW has them in stock. Check out the new Beetle at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan, or visit them at TucsonVW.com. Be sure to tell them that Mrs. Green sent you.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And I am certain if you are listening today, we're giving you a great deal to think about. I am so pleased to have this opportunity to interview Reverend Sally Bingham, who has started just an absolutely global movement. Sally, I say that with all sincerity. She started something called the Regeneration Project. Now there's the Interfaith Power and Light Campaign, very active, 39 state affiliates and 14,000 congregations that grew from her evolution to, I know all this information, I was a stay-home mom, and now look what, and I want to say, baby, look at you now, because you're rocking. It's really very, very encouraging and inspiring, and I'm sure it will be for all the people that listen. So let's talk about the website again. The one of them to go to is interfaithpowerandlight.com.
org.
That's really important. And I always tell people, if you're driving or listening to me on your droid or whatever and you can't write it down, please contact our staff, because we're happy to connect those big green dots. So Sally, let's talk about the piece I mentioned before we went to the break. I listened to almost an hour show that Diane Rehm had on NPR. And a lot of it were, the guests were scientists who heretofore had been, prior to this, had been absolutely global warming is not affected at all by the human condition, by what's going on, by the numbers of people on the planet, and are now in pretty rapid succession and in vast numbers saying, uncle. That's what I say. We're saying, uncle, we have done our own research. The needle is moving forward so rapidly, we can't deny it. So what do you believe is your role as these massive organizations to be a religious response to global warming? Because it's impacting everyone.
Well, I think that these converts are one of the most exciting things that's happened in this whole movement.
I do too.
Yeah. The skeptics and the deniers have really done a disservice.
Are now the converted.
The world. If you, again, and if someone's driving in their car, they can't do this, but on our website, we have climate converts. And those are people who were skeptics, outspoken, and have now come around and were convinced by their faith leaders that this was an issue they should get involved in. And I think we, at the moment, we just have four of them because this is a fairly new movement. We are hoping to have, and I'm sure he's probably the guy that was on Diane Rehm, a fellow, the most famous person is this Richard Mueller from the over Berkeley, what's it called,
Science Laboratory, I know, yes.
Okay, he is somebody who has been a denier for years, saying the science isn't correct, and he's the fellow that has continued to do his research and has now come out back to say, gosh, I think I made a mistake. The planet is warming, and it's due to human problem, what humans are doing. And we're finding that that is starting to happen, which is wonderful, because the big mystery for those of us who work in the faith community has been some of these, and I hate, again, it's because it's become a political issue that I believe this is happening, but people like John McCain, Lindsey Graham, I mean, elected officials on the Republican side who came out 5-6 years ago and said, this is a real issue. This is a problem that we need to address.
They did.
And Mitt Romney was one of them. And now they're saying, oh, no, it's not a problem. The science isn't decided yet. And they're switching. And I really have to say, where is the moral integrity of these people who know that it's a problem, who have done their own research, and then will come out and try to lead their party in another direction? When it's harming, it's killing people, and it's harming our crops, and look what's going on in America right now. Now, I'm not certain that we could have prevented this, but if we'd paid attention to the scientists 20 years ago and we had started cutting our greenhouse gas emissions, would we be having this amazing drought that's going all over the United States right now, where it's affecting the corn and the soybean crops and the price of food's going up? Now, the scientists told us 30, 40 years ago the droughts would be longer, the storms would be more severe, the flooding would be more severe, and that's what we're seeing now. And you can't say that one individual weather pattern was caused by climate, but the trend to get warmer and more severe storms and more fires, that's what they told us would happen, and it is happening. And it's going to affect the economy big time. So it really would behoove America if some of these naysayers, more of them, I mean, I'm glad that scientists are doing it now, and there were no climate scientists who were deniers.
Right. I've had Jonathan Overpeck on the show, and he said nobody that's really in my line of work denies this or questions it, because he said, you know, we're scientists, we're not politicians. We just reports it as we sees it. He's a great guest to interview, and he's of course one of the preeminent scientists on climate change. He's right here at the University of Arizona, and it was Richard Mueller. And they just did a feature on him in the Huffington Post. And what I think is amazing about someone like him is that he is proudly doing it. He doesn't have his tail between his legs. He's getting out there, and he's on NPR, and he's on writing articles in the Huffington Post saying, I was wrong, and I did my own research.
And you know how hard it is for people to say, I made a mistake.
Especially prominent people like that. You know, I mean, he's got pretty high profile.
Yeah. Well, we have on our website a terrific guy who lives in Delaware. His name is Mike Stafford. And he was part of the Republican National Committee at one time and is a Republican and is Roman Catholic. And he was listening to what the Pope had to say, who thinks that climate and poverty are connected to one another and that we have to do something about our greenhouse gas emissions. And, of course, they've put solar on the Vatican. So Mike Stafford went and did his own research, and he said, there's an essay by him on our website saying that he just could not deny the science.
So is it on the Regeneration Project website?
Yes.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. It's I think there's a search window. And
there
you
is.
You can put in climate convert.
He'd be a good person for the show. Absolutely, yeah. A great person for the show. And it's just to me, like I said, they're just wonderful. Richard Mueller is coming out saying humans are almost entirely the cause of climate change.
Yeah.
And he says, according to a scientist who once doubted that global warming even existed. So he did a lot of research. He went one step back. He wrote an op-ed piece for the New York Times. And it's very, you're right, it's exciting and it's important. And I think it will help others to at least revisit it and look and see what's happening. And, you know, the sad thing to me, and I don't like to be very sad, is on that show they also said, you know, there are no silver bullets. You look at China and India, which everybody does talk about that. They are working in some areas to take some steps. But, you know, one of the people that they interviewed said, if every person in China that's getting ready to buy a car bought an electric vehicle, we'd be in trouble because we don't have the power other than through dirty coal to charge up all those electric vehicles that the Chinese will want to be buying. So there have to be many solutions looked at from where I sit.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. Everybody has to pay attention and everybody has to do their part. And there was a time when people were saying, well, if they aren't going to work on climate in the developing world or in China and India, then we don't have to do it here. Now, that's just no excuse.
It's just really almost dumb. And I think that when we talk about the young people, some of the exciting things I get to go to, we have the Research Corporation for Science Advancement's headquarters here, and they do something once a year called Scilog, and it's a combination of science and dialogue. And I've been able to go as press to observe some of it, and you see these not just bright young people, but incredibly powerful, bright new ideas that they are doing research on in terms of alternative energy with nanotechnology. So I just keep hoping it's a matter of time where a couple of silver bullets, at least small silver bullets, do appear, and we can accelerate the process of just slowing down the climate change that we've seen just this year. I mean, the West is burning, the crops are dying, and I just wrote a newsletter yesterday, and I said, if we don't put it back in the conversation with the candidates, you know, the oceans will be the Dead Seas, and the West will have burned, the water wars have already started, so there's time to stop it, and I can't tell you enough how excited I was to be able to get you on the show, because I think the grassroots movements and people power and the human factor is what's going to help move it all forward.
Well, I think you're right, and it does have to come from the grassroots, because these politicians want to get reelected, and if they knew that people care and that people would contact them and say, we really care about this climate issue, we need you to stop the subsidies to big oil, to start helping out the clean renewable energies. And then the politicians would follow suit because they want to get reelected. But if people don't contact their representatives and they sit quietly back and just let the legislator say, oh, well, it's not a problem, I mean, we are hurting ourselves. One of the most wonderful vehicles we have in this country is the right to vote. And if we get out and vote for leaders who care about these issues and who will help keep America healthy, we can put those people in office.
And we can do it. That's what I say to people. I mean, it's just don't wait for a bill or a ban. Start with you. Don't wait. If we wait for the government to fix this, I will be long gone. And I have a lot of hope that when you talk about the youth that are involved in very secular movements and the faith-based organizations that are involved, and a lot of other such environmentally active and exciting organizations. Bill McKibben is a perfect example. And there are many, Food and Water Watch and the Story of Stuff and Earth Justice. I interview a lot of them. So I have to get my B12 shot in terms of let's have a lot of hope here, Gina, Mrs. Greena, because it can be daunting when you look at some of the bad news.
So but I think there is a lot of hope on the horizon with, you were talking about new technology. I think that brings hope. I think the fact that some of these scientists who were deniers who are coming around to say it's actually real, those are the things that are going to give us the hope to carry on
and keep
doing the work we're doing.
I totally agree. We don't have a lot of time left, and I just think it's so important. I've been a Rotarian for 21 years. And I am in it because we do think globally, act locally, and act globally. So can you talk a little bit, you've done some wonderful projects. There's great information on the website about funding projects in Africa and raising money, because we are a global community. That's all we are anymore. There's not any regions. We are one planet, and what happens in China doesn't stay in China, or what happens in Africa doesn't stay in Africa. So can you talk a little bit about the global initiatives, just a few?
Well, we have the four projects that are in the developing world. We've got one in Cambodia, one in Cameroon, one in Ghana, and one in Tanzania. And those are mostly tree planting programs where we're asking congregations here in America or people to make gifts to those communities so that they can go out and plant more trees. And we work with the All African Council of Churches, and then we have a Bishop Shu who's in Tanzania, and they're planting 3 million trees on Kilimanjaro. It's the faith community in the developing countries that we're working with, the evangelical Lutherans in Tanzania. And in Cambodia, one of those projects, again, it's on the website, it's called Carbon Covenant.
Yes, Carbon Covenant.
And we have a group of monks who are ordaining trees. I think there's a picture right on the front page of our website. Where those monks ordain trees because they're fighting illegal logging. And if they ordain their trees, nobody will cut them down because it's against the religion. And that's been a successful project. But what we're trying to do here is have folks in America understand that the trees in Africa matter. We have to keep replanting because the trees are carbon sinks. They are the ones that can absorb the carbon dioxide, and the more trees, the better. And, of course, a lot of those countries have cut their trees for fuel to where they have mudslides and they're...
Oh, it's devastating. It's one of those ripple effects that's the worst kind of ripple effect that you can imagine. I went to the rainforest in the beginning of my journey of Mrs. Green, and yes, the deforestation is devastating to see, and then it starts raining and you see the devastation of the flooding and the land. It looks like graveyards in many, many places, just absolutely dead land. So, Sally, we have to bring this show to an end. It will be blasted and broadcasted and live on our website. I will put information out to my team about the content so that we can get more people to listen to the podcast. And I thank you so much, not just for being on the show, but for what you're doing through your leadership to make such a difference to the planet. I just appreciate and respect you, and I hope our paths cross somewhere in this planet of ours.
Well, wouldn't that be fun? And if I get to Arizona, to the Arizona Interfaith Power and Light people, I will look you up when I'm
You there. Have to look me up, and I'll come to Phoenix. I'll go to Flagstaff. It would be great and to have you back as well. Next week we have Colin, and I think you say his name, Bevan, the No Impact Man. And I can't wait for this show either. He took his family off the grid in New York City. So thank you for being a part of Mrs. Green's World. Make it a great green week. And just remember, the planet needs all of us. Thanks for being here with us.